In our final show of the year, we kiss 2023 goodbye by talking about movies and books. Adam Donaldson and Candice LePage, the hosts of End Credits on CFRU, kick things off by decisively answering a 35-year-old question. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? Candice defends her love of Hallmark movies to a shocked crowd before redeeming herself by giving props to the best Canadian holiday slasher film, Black Christmas. Phil dismisses traditional Christmas movies as being propaganda of the patriarchy, and Tanya counters his grumpiness by highlighting one of her faves, White Christmas. After our discussion of regular movies, including a heated debate about director Martin Scorsese, we move on to some of the best books of 2023. From Moon of Turning Leaves to The Case Against the Sexual Revolution, our participants' picks are unputdownable. Now's the time to discover novels and moving movies.
Good morning, Breezy Breakfast. Today is Thursday, December 14th, and we are celebrating the final Breezy Breakfast of 2023. Today, we are talking novels. And what was the movie one you said, Tanya?
Moving movie.
So, as always, we start with a land acknowledgement. Guelph is situated on the traditional territory of the Haudenosaunee and the Attawanderock, and the treaty territory of the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation. We are directly adjacent to the Haldimand Tract, which is the traditional hunting territory for the Haudenosaunee for time immemorial. Today we get to talk books and movies as we move into the giving season. And our guests today are Adam A. Donaldson and Candice LePage. They have a wonderful show on CFRU End Credits. And for books, we do have a local librarian with us. So maybe Susan Ratcliffe will help us out with a few picks that she's seen coming through the library. So to kick us off, I would love to hear a little banter between Adam and Candice to give all of us just a little bit of an idea about what it's like to actually listen to their radio show End Credits. So since they're both so beautifully seated right at the front, everyone online can see them too. I'm going to just hand over both of the mics and we're going to pretend that it's an End Credits show and we're just listening in.
Where do we begin? We usually begin with movie news. Like we choose one thing, top three Christmas movies or top three movie trends from the last year, which is what we did in our last show together.
Yeah.
It's kind of breaking protocol because we have our top five in a couple of weeks.
I know, actually, and I had some notes for today that I was like, oh no, I'm like spoiling the best of.
Yeah, that was my concern too.
Oh, well.
Yeah, no, I had that thought too. It's like, I don't want to spoil and I'm still working on my top five.
Yeah, so.
Still watching stuff.
My spoiler is that there's not a lot on my top of the year. 2023 has not been
disagree.
The best year for
disagree.
Movies. I know you disagree. You mentioned it recently.
Look at and this. I was like, it's really? Chicken scratches, but look at it. That's like the beginning list.
I had to struggle to.
There's a new Miyazaki movie this year. There's a new Scorsese movie this year. There was a new Alexander Payne movie this year.
Yes. Alexander Payne. Listen, his name is Payne. I just don't. I'm not going to watch that movie.
But you know what? It's The Holdovers is one of his most heartwarming movies.
True. It's a seasonal movie.
It's a Christmas movie. The Holdovers is a Christmas movie. Watch it. It's actually on VOD right now. I mean, I like movies. It was actually a good year for Canadian movies, too. Mm-hmm. And a good year for Canadian movies getting a lot of circulation. So I Like Movies is a good example of that. Blackberry, the biggest ones.
True.
Bones of Crows, which is like this generational story about First Nations.
Big fan over here.
Which one? Blackberry?
No, the Bone of Crows.
Bones of Crows? Yeah, Bones of Crows is good. The Mr. Dress-Up Doc, which you can watch on Prime. Mm. Yeah, watch the Mr. Dress-Up Doc and not spend it crying.
Fair. I haven't watched that yet. Again, because spending a movie crying is just not what I want to do.
It's heartwarming crying, though.
Okay, so this is totally an argument in my family. Die Hard. Yes. Is it a Christmas movie?
The first one is.
Yes. Okay. So this actually goes, will introduce one of the movies I wanted to talk about today.
Go.
So I don't disagree that it's a Christmas movie. I do think it's a Christmas movie.
Good.
Adam is a much bigger proponent of this. He will share his dissertation on this. However, it is a Christmas movie. It's set at Christmas. I'll let you go, and then I'll introduce the movie I want to talk about.
Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Why? Number one, there's no reason for McClane to go and visit his wife unless it's Christmas, because the whole point of his visit is it's Christmas. They've been estranged for months. And he even plans on staying with a retired colleague. He's not planning on staying with his family. That's how broken up his family is, that the only reason he's there is in L.A. is Christmas. Number two, he's only at Nakatomi Tower because the Christmas party is there. And it's also, number three, personnel issues all over this, because why is there nobody else at Nakatomi Tower that the terrorists can just, like, take it over? It's because it's Christmas. It's Christmas Eve. Nobody's working. Reginald Vell Johnson, who's the cop, he responds to shots fired, but he's also on desk duty because he was involved in an officer-involved shooting. So why are you sending a cop on desk duty to a shots fired call if it's not Christmas Eve and you're shorthanded? So you don't have a movie unless it's Christmas, which is different from Die Hard 2, which also takes place at Christmas. But all you need to have a Die Hard 2 is busy airport, holiday, bad weather. And that doesn't necessarily involve Christmas.
Okay.
Over to you, Candace.
Yes. So again, I don't disagree. I think Die Hard is a perfect Christmas movie. But if you want that kind of action in an actual Christmas movie, I strongly, strongly recommend last year's movie, Violent Night.
Ooh.
Starring David Harbour as Santa. A Santa who kicks a lot of butt. He's basically the John McClane of Santas. So there is action. He has to stop I don't know if they're terrorists, but an organization who has come to kidnap and rob this very wealthy family. He's there to deliver the presents, and he gets trapped in the house, and chaos ensues. So if you want that kind of action, Violent Night is the way to go. If you also want Santa magic, Violent Night is the way to go, because this is the real Santa. He's got real magic. And if you need some Home Alone, yet another action-filled Christmas movie, there is some Home Alone action going on. One of the kids is also trying to help along. And we also just get the heartwarming family feels. This family doesn't like each other at all. They've had lots of problems. But this experience and Santa magic brings them all together. So Violent Night, while I do love Die Hard, if you want Christmas and action, I recommend Violent Night.
And just a quick comment from our online friend, Aaron. I started watching Violent Night with my daughter, and she deemed it too much swearing. So just a little proviso, it's probably more of an adult movie, because that's an 11, 12-year-old saying that.
She probably hears worse at school. I will see your Violent Night and raise you another more recent Christmas movie, Anna and the Apocalypse, which is a musical zombie comedy. It's a zombie apocalypse. It takes place at Christmas time. It's this little English town. Everybody sings. Not the zombies don't sing. Just to be clear, the zombies don't sing. The human characters sing.
They do provide some sort of percussion to the singing.
There's some musical accompaniment and some choreographed dancing in the background, but they do not sing. That would be silly. But no, it's good. Like, the music's good. The music's fun. It's a little English town, so you get a lot of interesting, quirky characters. And it's, you know, young people, so you're also learning life lessons at the same time. But, it's a great sort of, like, little lampshade to, you know, all these... What do all these movies have in common? They're Christmas, and they're violent and bloody and gory, and which I don't know what it says about us.
Well, you know, anybody who's ever listened to our show knows, anybody who's ever spoken to me knows that Black Christmas is
horror babies,
my favorite Canadian movie, Christmas movie, horror movie. Kind of just rounds up to my favorite movie of all time.
Also favorite Bob Clark Christmas movie.
Definitely my favorite Bob Clark Christmas movie, because there are 2.5 of those. I just learned about a new one today that's kind of seasonal. So, but so those of you who see my shirt, this is my Christmas shirt. I'm very excited about it. I just want to watch Christmas movies and drink hot cocoa. So whoever wrote the introduction email trying to get people to come out today obviously has not met me. some people know, because it says in there, we're going to talk Christmas movies, not Hallmark.
Oh, yeah.
So I do a project every year, at least starting since 2020, where I watch every single Hallmark Christmas movie, holiday movie, because some of them are not Christmas related.
Listen, they make 176 of them every year.
40. No. There are 40 this year.
176. It only feels like 40.
That's because the other networks also do their own Hallmark style Christmas movies. But so I will give everybody absolutely Hallmark. They're cheesy. They follow a whole, you know, they do the same thing all the time. There's lots of jokes about the like busy career woman who goes back to the small town, falls in love with a flannel wearing man.
He's always handy.
And all of that is true. There are certainly some of those. However, Hallmark has actually really changed in the last 3 years, because the CEO who was under Hallmark from 2004 or so until 2020 was a hardline evangelical Christian, and the show came out of a Christian like religious sort of channel. So that was what was going on Hallmark. A lot of that sort of stuff. There was a whole thing in 2019 where a million moms wrote them because there was an advertisement where two women kissed, and it was a bridal sort of thing. They stopped that advertisement, and then everybody else boycotted Hallmark. And so the moral of that story is listen to everybody else, because that guy left. Someone else is in charge now. And now if you watch Hallmark, you're going to see mixed race couples. You're going to see movies that aren't even about romance. You're going to see gay storylines. You're going
Jewish
to see
Christmas movies.
Movies. There was a Kwanzaa movie last year, actually, which was great, too. And this year, in fact, you can watch a movie about three 20-year-olds going on a pub crawl at Santa Summit. So while there are still the movies about the career woman who goes and meets the flannel-clad man and gives her whole life away, there's a lot more there, too.
Interesting.
One of our follow-up questions, and Candace touched upon this briefly, was this year, what were your favorite Christmas movies or not? Movies that involved queer characters.
So mine actually isn't from this year. It's from last year, but I watched it this year. Mm. And that's Bros.
Bros is good.
Yeah, Bros is great. It's a really, really nice story about two men falling in love, one of whom is Luke McFarlane, who is a huge star on the Hallmark Channel and has played both like queer romances and straight romances on the Hallmark Channel. And in fact, was in one I just watched the other night called Catch Me If You Claws, where he plays Santa. If anyone has seen Luke McFarlane, you'll probably wonder how that happens.
He's a good looking man. I can't think of any. I mean, one of the things that comes to mind, I can't believe I still think about this movie. You remember when we reviewed Last Christmas?
Yes.
Which is a really, it's not great. I was going to say it's dumb, but it's not dumb. It's just, it's not great. No. But I think about it a lot, because there is a one of the subplots in that movie is Amelia Clark's sister is in a same-sex relationship, and they're hiding it from the parents, who are kind of old-fashioned-y. But it's about how the Amelia Clark character is essentially a mess, and she had her heart transplanted, because it's all based on the George Michael song, Last Christmas. The twist is in the... Anyway.
Yeah, there's a twist.
Yeah, she has a heart transplant, and she's a mess because... That's the way these things go. But I mean, it's a perfectly entertaining film. It's not great, but that's something I was thinking about. I'm trying to think about queer relationships in films this year.
There haven't been many this year. No. Bottoms, but I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen Bottoms either. You're right. Morgan has a point.
Well, we have a queer individual online that would pipe in.
Please,
Aaron,
yes, please.
What would you like to add to the conversation?
I think that in terms of my top three that have queer characters, Single All the Way is pretty good. And so that's one that I would really recommend as my top one. The Happiest Season is another one where it's got a woman who is closeted, but it turns out in the end, as all Christmas movies do. So that's also a good one. And if you are feeling kind of like non-Christmassy, but Christmassy and a bit raunchy, then you can kind of go for the RuPaul movie that's kind of out on Crave. And it's called The Bitch Who Stole Christmas. But you really have to be kind of like in the mood for it. It's like an hour and a half long drag show, and it's very extreme.
Thank you so much, Erin, for coming in and giving us a few great movies to check out. Also online, coming in from the islands, where he is with his lovely birthday girl, Liz. Phil, what do you want to add to the conversation?
Good morning. First of all, it's nice to see people in the restaurant. It's a nice island theme that I'm looking at. Three movies, all of them with a redemption theme. One needs a BB gun. The other is Scrooged and Christmas Vacation. All three of them deal with issues where there's redemption at the end, which is a perfectly wonderful Christmas theme. In Scrooge, Bill Murray is a brilliant, nasty television executive who at the end realizes that life is a whole lot better with people than without them. Christmas Vacation, Chevy Chase is a father who truly wants to have the best family Christmas ever, and in the end actually does, as he battles with Christmas lights and nasty neighbors. And in A Christmas Story, a kid gets a BB gun, a dad gets a leg lamp, and at the end of the movie, the glasses are broken. All three are great, hilarious movies, and frankly, I really don't want any of the maudlin, over-the-top romantic stuff that you might feature somebody like Cary Grant or some old geezer who happens to hear a bell ring on Christmas. I get tired of that crap. I need something to laugh about, and that's my Christmas. As for my book, Bert, this might be for you. It's, I believe, the newest Ian Rankin book, A Heart Full of Headstone. Anybody that's a reader might enjoy a good detective yarn where my favorite detective, Rebus, actually starts out in jail. And this is the story of why he's in jail. A good read. And also, if you've ever been to Edinburgh, you'll appreciate all the settings and you'll definitely appreciate the rock and roll references. That's my Christmas, and I'm sticking to it.
Did you know, does everyone here know they made a sequel to A Christmas Story and it came out last year? It's called A Christmas Story Christmas. It was not good, but it exists. And that's all I have to say about that.
I would actually like to respond to Phil.
Excellent.
I think White Christmas is an excellent Christmas movie that has it all. Tap dancing, humor, and fake snow as well. I mean, it's great. So that's one that isn't actually, well, they're old fogies now. If they're still alive, I don't know. But
I think Rosemary Clooney was the last.
Oh, the last to go?
The last to pass away.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, that's my favorite. Thank you, Phil, for bringing that up to my mind.
Yeah, no, White Christmas is good. I like White Christmas. Never miss it. I mean, the music in that is incredible and memorable. Although the title song is lifted from an earlier Bing Crosby movie. Holiday Inn, 2 points for Phil. I mean, to attach myself to Scrooge. Scrooge is really good. My favorite Christmas Carol, though, is 1951 with Alistair Sim. That is Apex Mountain for Christmas Carol stories. It's also one of those Christmas Carols that fully embraces the fact it is a horror story. It is a horror movie. There's ghouls and goblins. And I mean, that part where the Ghost of Christmas Present lifts his robe and the two kids are there and their want and ignorance. And he's warning Scrooge to beware of them both, but especially beware of ignorance. Just freaks me out every time, even more than the Ghost of. And, you know, one of the versions of A Christmas Carol that gets the horror element the most is actually a Mickey's Christmas Carol. Because that end sequence where the Ghost of Christmas Future pushes Scrooge McDuck into the grave, and the coffin opens and the hellfire starts licking his webbed feet. That messed me up. And it's Pete, right? Goofy's nemesis, Pete. And he takes down the hood and he goes, "It's yours, Ebenezer, the richest man in the cemetery," and pushes him in. Still gets me after all this time. I think it's on Disney Plus too.
Yes. Well, so I was going to say I opened Disney Plus recently, and I was so pleased to see all of the Christmas carols are all under the fantasy section. Mm. I'm like, oh, so we're actually going to be like honest about this. Like, these are genre films. Like, just because it's literary doesn't mean it isn't also horror or fantasy. I mean, Dickens was writing like pulp novels, literally. Like, they were like 10-cent pieces. So.
Chapter by chapter, in some case.
We have a comment or something from John Steggles.
Remind me, guys, there's a terrific Christmas movie that got panned by the critics, but my kids absolutely loved it. Dudley Moore in a Christmas movie. And you can't find it anywhere now because I've tried to find it. And I don't know where it is, but it's good. I don't even remember what it's called, but he's really good in it.
Was this something that was made for TV, or did it?
No, it was came out in theaters.
I don't know. John Lithgow, Burgess Meredith. This is a pretty good cast list.
I'm going to nominate Elf as one of my also favorite movies because, honestly, Will Ferrell just kills it in that role. So Elf. It was even made into a musical. That's how good that movie was.
If you want a good Will Ferrell Christmas movie, stick with Elf. Don't go near Spirited, which came out last year with Ryan Reynolds. It's a musical. It's not great. It does play on the, you know, Scrooge theme where Ryan Reynolds needs to, or is which one of them needs to, it's Will Ferrell who's the Scrooge character, right? This is how much of an impression this movie made. It was not great.
I just looked up, there's a website called Just Watch, where you can look up a movie and see where it's streaming somewhere. And it's not 100%, but it looks like Santa Claus the Movie is available to stream on Prime Video and on the CTV app. And you can also rent it on Amazon, Apple. I don't know where you can get the disc. Spirited, I actually forgot about that till you mentioned it. It's a Wonderful Life, too, I guess, is another obvious one that I always watch. Should we give a round of applause to Bev? Should we take that time? Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, I was going to bring up the Jimmy Stewart of it all after Phil's comment about modeling old guys, but I didn't want to keep going to Hallmark. But while I do love It's a Wonderful Life, I think it's a great film. One of my favorite Jimmy Stewart movies is actually The Shop Around the Corner, which is it's one of those movies that is commonly sort of paid homage to with other movies. And my very favorite Hallmark movie of this year is called Holiday Hotline. And it's a similar sort of thing where two characters are actually characters calling into the turkey hotline to find out how to make a turkey. And the person on the other end of the line, the two of them fall in love over the course of the movie while in real life, they sort of know each other. They meet. They're not really, they kind of have a meet cute that's a little bit like everybody's a little angry at each other, and they slowly fall in love. And of course, the typical thing happens where one of them finds out, oh, it's that person. And that's when you sort of start going, okay, if this were like a normal real life sort of thing, you'd probably just say something. But that never happens in the movies. Last year, one of my favorite movies of the year was called Hanukkah on Rye, which is the same thing. It's a shop around the corner, but between two Jewish delis, where the two leads are the kids of the deli owners, and it's great. So Shop Around the Corner is a great movie. Jimmy Stewart is amazing, and it's one of those infinitely repeatable sort of stories that you can just put that whole thing in a new setting. I mean, they did it with You Got Mail, and everybody loved that.
Sorry, do we have a question?
Well, I'm just thinking, before Juanita actually gets into this beautiful breakfast that she has here today, let's get her. Juanita brought a bunch of books that she wants to share with us, and I know there's others that brought some books too. So we're going to let Juanita tell us about her books so she can enjoy her meal.
Okay, I will put a quick plug out for A Miracle on 34th Street. Both versions I really appreciated, but haven't watched in years. So books, I have a pile, and I'm going to start with the one I'm actually reading right now, which is Roxane Gay's Hunger, which is a memoir about violence and bodies and lots of other things. I'm not done it, but it's, I'm really appreciating that book. The next four I brought are, I'm going to tie it to a holiday theme because I plan to read these over the holidays. They have been on my list, some of them for a long time, some of them not so much. I have now got Moon of the Turning Leaves by Wahb Rice, which follows up Moon of the Crusted Snow. And I'm really looking forward to it, but may actually have to read the other one first. It was a while ago when I read it. I may not. I don't know. Ivo Andrich wrote The Bridge on the Drina, and my son has been pushing me to read this for years. It's got really small writing, so it's going to take a while, but it's about a history of the Balkans, basically. And I think it's probably really important to read that. The other one, I was lucky enough to go to a book launch this week. So this is the second time I got to talk about books in a crowd, which is amazing. Eric McBay wrote Inversion, which is a science fiction book. And I don't read a lot of science fiction, but he sold me on it. And it's, I'm really looking forward to that. It's got a whole other kind of world, which I got a hint of on Tuesday night. And I'm really excited about that. And the other one is a timely one that I should have read when it came out in 2018, but I did not. But it's by our friend Greg Shupak, The Wrong Story, Palestine, Israel, and the Media. And I think it's more timely than ever.
For those who don't know, I also host another podcast, which is called The Village Podcast from the Bookshelf. So me and Steph Manette from the Bookshelf talk monthly about books and things. Anyone who listens to that will know that I have been doing a seemingly lifelong journey. I started actually in, I think, June of 2019 to read every single Stephen King book in chronological order of publication, which seemed daunting enough. But in 2019, since 2019, he's put out like six more books. Like, the list shouldn't be getting longer, sir. Come on. But so I'm, I don't know, maybe two thirds of the way there. I've just finished all of the books that he's read, written as of the first decade of the 2000s. So I'll be starting into the 2010s in January. But I've also started a project, because this is how I live my life. I do things via projects. I started a project a few years ago where I read Christmas stories at Christmas time. And so this year, unfortunately, I've actually read, I started with some terrible romance short stories, which are not good, but I don't actually read any of those. I do watch Hallmark movies, but I don't read those types of books. So I figured I'd give it a try. Well, I don't know about losers, but I figured I'd give it a try. So I have, and I also have a nice book of Christmas ghost stories to go to next. So I'm very excited about that.
Thank you so much, Candace. You do so much that people just don't know about. Everybody just thinks of you in one way, and you're this amazingly rounded person. Imagine that. I was about to go to Susan Ratcliffe, and I'm just going to wait. I have been watching a lot of Netflix lately, and I'm not much into Christmas movies. I'm not much into the season the last little while. But one of the movies that I watched recently that I'd really recommend anybody that wants to sort of understand Indigenous life a little bit better is Rye Bread, Faith, and Me. It is a story of some young Indigenous people and their experiences going on to reserve. And just, it's a real story, And it's an entertaining story, and it also provides some insight into what life on the res can be like. So now it looks like Susan is ready to let us know about her choices. And I'm going to hand the mic over to Susan.
If I were to recommend things to watch, you two, I'd watch the Virgin River Christmas episode. And I just watched last night while writing Christmas cards. Yes, I write Christmas cards. Call the Midwife Christmas series, two movies. None of that ghost or horrible. If I had Stephen King, I'd never sleep again, really. So I want to just talk. This one is my favorite book of the whole year. I don't have the book because my son's reading the book. It's Fireweather by John Valiant, The Making of a Beast. So it's Canadian. I actually had dinner with John Valiant when he came to the Eden Mills Writers Festival, talking about his book, The Tiger. He's one of the best readers we've ever had at the festival. But this one is about the Fort McMurray fire. And if you want to be scared about climate change, well, it's amazing, the research, the writing. You won't ever buy new furniture from IKEA or anywhere again, because he tells you about the tests where that new furniture burns in 1 minute versus traditional old wood furniture that would not rip, barely burn at all. And that's why Fort McMurray went up so fast, because of all the plastic stuff in the houses. So I'd highly recommend this book. Another one that's a sort of, I'll just talk about this one, the only one. It's called The Salt Path by Wynne Rayner. And she and her husband lost everything. Their home in Wales that they had restored, their farm, their sheep, every single thing, because of a bad investment and a bad friend. And they had nothing, absolutely nothing left. So sort of odd that they decided to walk the coastal path in England. So they started at Minehead and walked all the way down to Land's End and all the way 650 kilometers carrying a pack that they got on eBay and almost no food. They were eating noodles and fudge because they didn't have any money. So they truly are homeless. But the story that she tells is quite inspiring of what two almost 60-year-olds do when they're suddenly lost their whole life. So I would recommend that one.
Thank you so much, Susan. Just as you were talking about the Fort McMurray fire, my mom lived in Fort McMurray way before the fire. She left before the fire happened. And then she went back after some of the rebuilding happened, and she was astounded by a lot of the changes. So that is a very poignant piece of Canadian history, even though it is very recent history. And I think maybe we all need to learn a little bit more about it. All right, Phil, I'm hearing that there's something that you would like to say.
Thank you. For a real life Christmas story, I would suggest that you read the article written by Joyce Struthers about my wife, Liz. And it truly is a Christmas story, as she was adopted on Christmas Eve from a mother who was from London, who had her but couldn't keep her because of various situations that are told in the story. But the interesting thing about that is her mother was a midwife in London. And the other interesting thing is that Liz's step niece is friends with the producer writer of Call the Midwife. And she is quite interested in talking to Liz for a potential follow-up to Call the Midwife, because Liz fits perfectly into the whole scenario that midwives dealt with in London. Now, this was something we didn't know until we met them, which was 65 years later. And, We're quite thrilled that Liz found her family and that everything turned out positively, because it could have been exactly the opposite. But Joy wrote a great story, and the the lament that I have about the media is that we are losing it far too quickly, and that people like Joy, who can write a very heartfelt Christmas story, are losing jobs. It would be well worthwhile for people to comment to, I believe it's Metro Media now, Adam, who owns it, to say Guelph needs more media.
Yeah, I'll second that sentiment. I'll second the article too, because you know, Joy Struthers wrote it. It's really well written, and I mean, as important as to have, you know, reporters sitting at city council and the police board and school boards and all that, it's important to have people just telling interesting stories about people in our community. Because what is our community? It's people. It's not just our politicians. It's not just our community leaders. It's people like Liz who have interesting life stories and have very Hallmarkian, let's say, adventures abroad. I wanted to attach myself to something Morgan said, highlighting some Indigenous stories. Indigenous filmmakers are kind of having a moment. I mean, and we've seen that in Canada, especially in genre. Something we've talked about on our show a lot is Blood Quantum, which is a zombie movie which takes place on an Indigenous in an Indigenous community in the during a zombie apocalypse. It turns out that Indigenous people are immune from zombie bites, so they become sort of the last refuge of people trying to escape the zombie apocalypse. And I won't spoil anything, but a lot of interesting commentary there. There's another one called Night Raiders, which takes place in kind of a dystopian future. That's also an Indigenous-led film. I heard about an interesting one a couple of weeks ago that's coming out this coming year. It's called Cold Road, and it is, if you've seen the Spielberg movie Duel, which is about a guy driving through the countryside being chased by a semi, it's essentially that, but it's on a road in the north, an ice road in the north, with an Indigenous woman in the lead. It's called Cold Road, and it's supposed to come out next year. So that's an interesting one to look for, too.
Yeah, I'll definitely second the Blood Quantum. However, this year I watched, so the director, writer-director of that movie, Jeff Barnaby, we actually lost last year, passed away far too young, only made, I think, three movies, but I watched another one of his movies this year called Rhymes for Young Ghouls, and it's not a genre film, so those of you who maybe don't want to watch zombies can watch this movie. However, I still would classify it as a bit of a horror because it is about a family and the trauma that, you know, they have. There are drugs and alcohol involved. There's suicide involved. There's pedophilia involved. It is about a group of young Indigenous students who really don't want to go to the residential school. And part of it is because one of the teachers there is abusing the other children. So they it's a whole crime caper where they plot out a way to expose this sort of thing. So it is a really difficult watch, but it's entirely grounded in reality, which is sometimes even worse than watching a zombie movie. But Jeff Barnaby was a real voice and not afraid to tell really hard stories like that. And it's really too bad that we've lost him.
Before I give Morgan the mic back, another one I'll put in a good word for that came out this year features an Indigenous character played by an Indigenous actor. It's How to Blow Up a Pipeline, which sounds kind of incendiary, and it kind of is, but it's about this group of young people who have all been affected by this oil company, and they decide to blow up the pipeline as a way of sort of resistance. And one of the best characters in the film is this Indigenous character who is their munitions expert. He's their demolition expert. And he's just kind of so surly and standoffish the whole movie. And as they're going out to blow up the pipeline, he's giving them last minute instructions. And then he just pauses and he turns to them and he says, "I'm very proud of all of you right now." And it's a moment just like it brings down the house as like his delivery. But that's a really great film to watch. I think has gotten over missed over this year. Because it's good drama. It's as tense as like any heist movie, but it's got this really interesting sort of socio-political message about, you know, what resistance looks like. The other thing too is we're talking about Indigenous issues, you know, in movies. Probably be remiss if we didn't mix in a word about Killers of the Flower Moon, which I do think is one of the year's best movies. And I have heard a lot of commentary from indigenous critics who don't like it. And I completely understand their justifications with it. But as like a bookend for like Martin Scorsese, I know we're mixed on Martin Scorsese, but I'm a Gen X, I'm a white middle-aged Gen X movie buff. And so Martin Scorsese's my father, Spielberg's my mother. it is really interesting looking at that story through the lens of sort of what Scorsese has done in his career, which is by and large stories about like really greedy and lucky white guys who then start acting dumb because they've been so successful in their crime. But the real star of that movie is Lily Gladstone, who is so great. She does capital A acting, and not in like big ways, in like very, very small ways. And she is so brilliant in that movie. Like Leo and Bobby De Niro get top billing, but she is the star of that movie. And so I think it's well worth seeing. 3.5 hours, I understand. 3.5, but it is on VOD now, so you can pause and start. So
okay, so just staying on the theme of indigenous issues, I would love to recommend a book. It's called This House Is Not a Home. And it's based on real events. It is written by a Dene woman. Her name is Katlia. I am probably mispronouncing it. And is based on real events about displacement and just horrible treatment of Indigenous people. And honestly, this is the best book I have ever read about this history in Canada, it above all. So I highly, highly recommend that book. Next, I'm going to recommend a book called How to Murder Your Employer. So this is about a college where you learn how to delete people that the world would be better off if they were not around. So there are three people who are approached by this dean of the college, and it tells about their quests to kill their employers. Three different quests, three different endings, and full of dry wit, and you'll love it. Okay, another excellent book is called The Seven Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle. This is a book where you might be thinking at the beginning, what is going on here? It's kind of like Groundhog Day meets Clue. So you've got various characters in various rooms, and the protagonist wakes up in this manner. He, like a M-A-N-O-R, and he's got amnesia, and he has 7 days to figure out who killed Evelyn Hardcastle in order to get out of this dreamlike world, let's say. It's fun. It's full of, again, dry wit. It's an excellent mystery. And it goes beyond classical mystery stories. So you've got sort of a magical realism, sort of. It's not magical realism. It's just a different world. It's so cool. I want to also recommend, I think this book is very timely. It's called Can We Talk About Israel? Now, this is a book written by, I would say, a guy who is an expert. Everyone will learn something when they read this book. Highly recommend it if you want to have an idea of why certain people feel certain ways. I learned things, and I'm sure you all will too. Pair that with a short history to the Palestine-Israel conflict, and you've got a good grounding for, you know, going further and trying to understand what's going on in the Middle East. And finally, my last recommendation, nonfiction, is called The Case Against the Sexual Revolution, written by Louise Perry. I see some eyebrows going up. This is a controversial book. I would recommend you read it because the sexual revolution is generally considered to be a good thing in that it attacks stereotypes, gender roles, that sort of thing. But basically, pardon my language, how do I put this? I'm not going to put it politely. The theme of the sexual revolution was basically that women can move like men. And that isn't true. There are differences between men and women. And at the end of this book, the author says, you know what? Listen to your mother. Listen to your grandmother. They're going to give you great advice about how to live your sexual life. Okay, thank you very much.
I know we're talking movies, and this is actually a show. It's 4 episodes, so I kind of look at it as a really long movie, like one of those 3-hour ones, maybe a little bit longer. But it's a show called All the Light We Cannot See. And it is about, it's based on a true story about a blind French girl and a young German soldier whose paths collide during World War II. It's actually a really interesting story. Like I said, it's only 4 episodes long. It is currently on Netflix. I enjoyed the cinematography of it. It was visually pleasing, even though it is set in Nazi-occupied France in the Second World War. Hang on, Susan's got a point she wants to make, and I think this is an important one.
The actor that plays the girl who's blind, the actor is blind, who played that part, and it's phenomenal.
And John Steggles is saying the book is better, so read the book or watch the show. And the actor that Susan is speaking of is Aria Mia Loberti. I believe this is her first acting role, and she is blind. Honestly, if I didn't know she is blind, I would have believed that a sighted actor was playing a blind character. No clue that she was, like, unless somebody told me, I wouldn't have known that she was definitely blind. All right. We are just past the 9 o'clock hour, and Tanya is signaling that there is somebody that wants to say something.
The book I have is called Searching for Franklin, and it's written by Ken McGogan, I guess a fellow qualified. He's written but 6 books that have read, that have made a lot of history with his research on Franklin and exactly what happened in the ship crash and everything like that. It's very interesting to get into his type of work. I would highly recommend that. And he's a local individual, so it's something that we could support.
Thank you so much, Warren, for sharing that. All right, Candace. One of the conversations you and I have had a little bit is about a specific series within the Stephen King catalog. How is the Tower series in your estimation? Because it is something I'm still dying to finish reading.
Don't bother. I believe I am the only Stephen King fan who does not like this series, but no, I'm a big no. Half the reason why it's taken me so long to get through the 2000s is because he put out 3.5 Dark Tower series books. And so I had to read 3 in a row, and it was torture. I do not like the series. The first book is great. The Gunslinger, incredible book. Stop there.
You think that's torture? Watch the Dark Tower movie. It was Matthew McConaughey and Idris Elba, I think. Yes, that's the Gunslinger. I'd like to offer a few more picks if people like to stay with me. I mean, in theaters right now, The Boy and the Heron, which is a new Miyazaki film, it's very, very good. And it's also nice to see old-fashioned-y cell animation, which we don't see in theaters a lot. I mentioned Holdovers, which is a good one to talk to look at. Showing Up, if you know Kelly Reichardt, she does a lot of these kind of mumblecore movies, quirky characters and ordinary slices of life. Showing Up is a lot of fun. It's about if you're a Guelphy at heart, It's about a local sort of college art scene. So you'll probably recognize some of the characters in it. But it's a lot of fun. There's a whole plot about two artists who are like trying to nurse a bird back to health. If you're looking for something funny, Jewish theme too, You Are So Not Invited, my bar mitzvah, especially if you have young people, bat mitzvah, thank you. It's an Adam Sandler movie, but it's mostly the two young women in it who are the stars. For a documentary, CanCon, there's a doc on Apple TV Plus called Still, a Michael J. Fox movie, and it's about the life and career of Michael J. Fox and how he's battling Parkinson's. That's really good, really well made. Also on Apple TV Plus, Tetris, which turns like how the invention of Tetris into essentially a James Bond movie. It's based on a true story. It's not essentially true, but it's based on a true story, but it's a lot of fun. Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. That's another one that's kind of aimed at young women. The adaptation of a really great book, but it's really, really well done. If you're looking for something fun on Netflix, actually, Dungeons and Dragons, Honor Among Thieves. It's like a heist movie set in the world of Dungeons and Dragons. It's Chris Pine, Michelle Rodriguez, possibly the best Bradley Cooper cameo ever. That movie's a lot of fun. We have a fan, but it is as a fantasy movie, it's just like a fun watch. It's a lot of fun too.
Okay. Phil has something to say about Stephen King.
Yeah. I want to defend Candace and her love of Stephen King. And I'm not going to talk about The Shining or Children of the Corn or The Shawshank Redemption. I'm going to talk about Stand By Me from the short story, The Body. Stand By Me is the best horror story ever written because it focuses on what is horrible to a young kid. And what is horrible is a nasty older brother or a locomotive or the rumor of a body somewhere. And worst of all, leeches. If you haven't seen it, it's well worth seeing because the horror is not necessarily in the imagination. Sometimes it's out there and it's as real as your age. Who hasn't been afraid of a bully older person in the neighborhood or the junkyard dog or any of those things? Those are real horrors. And even just now, as we're sitting here in beautiful sunny Costa Rica, darned if a scorpion didn't walk up to listen to Breezy Breakfast. These are things that are real, and we need to cope with them. But that's a great movie with a great soundtrack, and it's based on Stephen King's life.
Thank you so much, Phil. And alrighty, Aaron, you had a movie you wanted to get some input from Adam and Candace on. What is it?
So I wanted to know your feelings on Barbie, because Barbie was the huge movie of the year. And I was a Barbie child. I had all of the punk rock Barbies. I made their hair all mohawks. And my daughter is a complete Barbie hater. She's like, we would go down the Barbie aisle and she's like, bleh, just too much. So, but she loved the movie and she became like at least a Barbie movie convert. She still hates the doll. But how do you guys feel about the Barbie movie?
Yeah, so spoiler alert for our year-end show, Barbie is my favorite movie of the year. I could not believe how good this movie was. I went in thinking it would be like a cheesy, kind of fun movie with a great soundtrack, which it was. But I cried like multiple times, and I've never been like so moved by sunlight through tree leaves dancing. Like, who takes time in a Barbie movie to just do that? It was really, really incredible. I think the movie is very good, and I think that everybody should see it, no matter their age, no matter their gender, no matter whatever, and feel the beauty, but also enjoy the Ken of it all.
I would ditto a lot of that. Barbie is a miracle. A major Hollywood studio wrote a $150 million check to an indie filmmaking luminary to make a message movie about the most popular doll of all time. It is crazy. And I mean, it's almost as crazy just how successful that movie is. But I mean, it is a testament of how well it spoke to people, everybody. I love Barbie and I have no background, playing with Barbies. I'm familiar with the doll. obviously I have sisters who have played with Barbies, but it spoke to me, and there were no easy answers in it about matriarchy or patriarchy or what it means to be a woman or what it means to be a modern woman. But it had all of that, and it had weird Barbie, and it had throwback jokes to like the bizarre Barbie who had like a jukebox in her torso. And of course it was coupled with this other complete oddity, Oppenheimer. So it became Barbenheimer, which is a weird phenomenon this year, that something that no person who works in marketing would have come up with on their own, this like pairing these two movies and making them an event on their own. So you go see Barbie, which is this uplifting, positive thing, and then you go see Oppenheimer, which is literally about the guy who destroyed the world or thinks he destroyed the world. The interesting thing about both those movies, though, is just their afterlife and how they've sort of permeated the culture. There's this guy on Twitter. I will not call it X. It's still Twitter. But there's this guy on Twitter who takes the last 2 minutes of Oppenheimer and sets it to different music. He set it to the Linkin Park song at the end of the Transformers movie. And then he did another one recently where he set it to the music at the end of every Saw movie. And it works. And it's so bizarrely mimetic in that way. So yeah, like both these, of course, like idiosyncratic filmmakers, Christopher Nolan, Greta Gerwig. And it's like, these are going to be like the two big Oscar. These are going to be the Oscar movies that are going to be fighting it out come spring. Movie about the guy who made the atomic bomb. Movie about the biggest best-selling doll of all time. Completely bizarre, but it's completely understandable too.
Well, I'm glad that we brought up the Oscar nominees in our little show here today. And I don't know about other girls, but I'm one of those girls that bit the toes off my Barbies because I felt that the feet were just way too disturbing. And they looked better without toes on them. The Barbie feet to me are, they just look painful. It was easier without the toes. I made a weird Barbie, apparently. Juanita, you wanted to add something to the conversation as we're winding down.
I missed something when I was talking about Eric McBay's Inversion that I want people to think about. The last line here, Inversion stages an experiment in new possibilities of living, a tale of social struggle set in a wildly unique universe, animated by questions of climate collapse and collective action. And make the point that it's by AK Press and in a new series called the Black Dawn series. And I think there are about five so far, but watch for Black Dawn series books from AK Press.
Thank you for adding that. So we are coming to the end of our show. I'm going to give Candace and Adam the opportunity for very final words for Breezy Breakfast 2023.
I'll let Candace have the last word. Just thanks for having us. And we will have our top five of the year show on December the 28th. That's going to be that's episode of End Credits at 3 p.m. on that day. So it's me, Candace, and our other two co-hosts, Peter and Tim. And I'll be sure to put in a plug for my other CFRU show, Open Source is Guelph, which goes to air today at 5 p.m. Our guest is Leanne Caron. Maybe you've heard of her. So tune in for that. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. This is really fun. It's always nice to be invited to things for my own stuff and not for any other responsibilities I might have around the city. But yeah, so I'm on End Credits with Adam. Again, the Bookshelf podcast, it's called The Village from the Bookshelf. We'd love it if you listen to that as well. And if you talk to me after, I can talk to you about my music podcasts also.
Now, I am going to go to announcements. Okay, Transport Futures. They've got a couple of webinars on December 19th from 1 to 2 p.m. It's about transit fare policy challenges. So for details and ticket info, please go to transportfutures.com. Now, finally, ring in the new year with Jaywalking Guelph, the Guelph Early Days Tour. This is on New Year's Eve. It's a 90-minute walk downtown with stories from Guelph's rich past, Sunday, December 31st at 2 p.m. Time travel makes a great gift. Step into 2024 by stepping back to the 19th century. Tickets are available at jaywalking, the Eventbrite site, or email jaywalkingguelph@gmail.com. It's $25 a person. Be prepared to be transported. And I believe that's a wrap. Thank you, everybody, for being here. And we'll see you next year on January 4th. We're going to be talking about rentals, and we've got some good news. Thank you all.
Thanks for tuning in to the last Breezy Breakfast of 2023. Music was provided by Jules Germ, post-production by Scotty Hertz. And all of us at Breezy Breakfast wish you a happy and healthy holiday season. May you enjoy peace, love, and grooviness in 2024.